What's up, Beefs? July 31st, 2020, Flight School Part 2.
Kind of flew through some stuff, because I was trying to make it a one-off. Let's go ahead and just give it all I got on that. So I ended it at the solo, but let me kind of like give you an idea. Like I said, it's very much, you're on your own. So imagine a job where you had to come in 2 hours before the flight for what's called the brief, and then you really want to be there about half hour before, right? Because you got to pick up a few pieces of gear from the gear locker and that sort of thing and make sure you're not late. But that's 2 hours. You got a 2 hour flight. It's like an hour or two for the brief, 2 hour flight, and then like maybe another hour of the debrief, right? So you're talking about 6 hour day when you're flying, and especially in the beginning, you're not flying very often because you're low on the priority. Now, the priority list is getting people graduated. Every month you have to graduate, let's make up a number, 4 graduates. If you just started and a guy's about to graduate, he needs 4 more flights, he's going to get those that week and you may only get one. So you get the idea. So you don't, you know, you're flying like 2 to 3 times a week in the beginning. At towards the end, you fly more. I had a friend, there's some exceptions. I had a friend who came into the Marine Corps with 1,000 flight hours. To put that in perspective, after 9 years, 9 years in the Marine Corps, I had 1,300. I can't remember the exact number, but so I had 200 more hours than this guy when he started. Now he flew this goofy, you know, he flew Cessnas and stuff like that, but he was so good that he was doing 2 or 3 flights a day. There's maximums, and he called it, I'm getting double pumped up the ass. But in reality, it was super simple for him. I remember asking him for help, like, how do I do this? And he goes, I don't know, I just do it. He's like, I've been doing it for so long that I don't remember how to. I was like, yeah, but weren't you an instructor? He's like, yeah, but that was a long time ago. And he's like, you just move the needle. Like, the way they teach you in the Navy is like, that's like so basic that you're asking a guy that does calculus to teach you how to use a pencil. It's like, oh, right. So the level of difficulty is high. I got nauseous my primary experience was like nausea. Anyway, but the way it works is you don't have to be there. So you get a lot of time off and you call like the night before around 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, you call and say, hey man, am I flying tomorrow? No? Cool. Party time. Lots of party time. My roommate used to think it was cool to like have fancy cocktails. So if we were both not flying the next day, he would just be like, hey man, I made cocktails. You know, you're 25, you have a little bit of money in your pocket, not a lot. You know, it's not new car money, but you got the money to be able to party, to go to the sushi place and throw down 200 ducats on a night. You got like, you know, you're kind of living the life. You're not working, the work is very hard and it's a lot of time consuming stuff. The amount of studying required is super high. It's like Asian high. You really have to get your head out of your butt and study hard, because even if you don't want to be doing it, they view things like this. If you fail out because you didn't try hard academic, or if you fail out because you quit, that's like the worst thing you could be. You just DOR, because flight is volunteer only. You can quit anytime for any reason, including no reason. Hey, I quit. Why? Cuz. Well, come on, man. What do you mean, cuz? You seem to be pretty good at this and that. Cuz. You could say, like, hey, man, why are you quitting? Systemic racism. But that doesn't make any sense. I don't care. I don't want to fly anymore because it's systemically racist. You can say that, and they can't say anything back to you. Doesn't matter what you say. You could say, I quit. Why? Well, because I realized, like, I'm a Satanist Nazi, and Satanist Nazis don't believe in flight. In fact, I don't think the plane's really flying. I think it's all a conspiracy. Doesn't matter why. They hate that because they put a lot of effort into you and they count on you. The next worst thing is not trying. And the only way you could really not be, you can't really practice flying. Okay, they have sims and I use them a little. They don't, doesn't really help. It's so, the level of like, you know, Lewis Hamilton said that, you know, possibly the best Formula One driver of all time, maybe, we'll see, said that he doesn't use simulators because he doesn't believe it helps him. Well, I'm in agreement. I don't believe that you can that you can that it gives you a lot. Not the basic, you know, MS Office Flight Simulator. They had them. I should have used them more. I didn't feel at the time it really helped, and I didn't care. I hated it. Once I started getting nauseous, because I had this whole plan. I'm going to study. I'm going to get in the plane first so I know what's going on so I don't get used to simulator. And then I'm going to use the simulator to really learn. After getting nauseous and hating it, I was like, oh, this sucks. And I don't want to do it. So I'm not going to. But I didn't want to be one of the big losers. Like, okay, the only... If you... Oh, the second worst, the third worst way to get out is... Now it becomes acceptable. You just can't get the flying part down. You just... Something in your monkey brain doesn't work with flying. And you're just incompatible. They were like... They actually viewed that as... That's okay, man. And then they would try to... Like, if you quit... Or if you failed out because of academic lack of trying... They were kind of jerks. And they kind of try to, like, F you over. If you failed out because you couldn't fly... You could call them monkey skills. They were more like... Ah, it's cool. Like... We'll try to hook you. What would you like to do? And they would actually try to get it for you. They would actually, like, advocate on your behalf. And they would make your life easy while you waited. Whereas the opposite were true for quitting and for academic. The least bad way to get out was physiological. Meaning you got threw up all the time. And I was throwing up all the time. But you don't just, like, it's not just like, oh, I threw up twice, you're done. They don't even start worrying about it. So many people get airsick the first couple flights that they don't even worry about it till flight 7. If you get airsick on flight 7, you get sent to the doctor, and then he prescribes... they can prescribe them. The first step is he gives you advice on how to do stuff, and he tells you to eat ginger and chew ginger gum. So I did that, and it worked. Enough. I was still nauseous, and it was still like a battle up there. It got a lot easier. I had a great on-wing. You get this thing called an on-wing. And what happens is you get a guy that you fly with all the time, same dude. In order for him to see your tendencies, understand you, get to know you, you spend a lot of time with this man. A lot. Especially in primary, where it's just you and him. In helos, we'll discuss, it's more than one person. It's just you and him. And you, and if it's like for the first like 20 flights or something, that's 40 hours. Plus another 40 hours of pre-flight and another 40. You've spent 3 work weeks with this guy easily over a couple months or whatever it is. You know, I don't have the timings correct. My guy happened to be great. It is hard. You have to memorize maps to the point where you can draw them up on a dry erase board from memory. You have to memorize the engine components, the different various systems. For instance, there's a prop system. There's the actual turbine. There's hydraulic system. There's a control system that's a, you know, part of the hydraulics. The landing gear. There's a whole pre-flight thing. You have to be able to... You have to know every piece of that plane. I got caught. It was so funny once. This is way later in the training. We're out there and the guy goes, all right, tough guy. Show me the flux capacitor. And I'm like, oh, shit. The flux capacitor. And I'm like, okay. And I just open. I'm like, that sounds like an engine component. I don't know what engine component. I'm like, what? Where? And on the different sides of... So it's like the... It's got a hood that opens up like on either side, like an old timey Mercedes. So I'm going from one side to the other. I'm like, okay, flux capacitor. And in my head, I'm looking for this square thing with like this triangular shape in the middle. And I'm like, I'm picturing the flux capacitor. If you haven't gotten the joke yet, you will in a minute. And he's like, how much energy does the flux capacitor, how much energy can pass through the flux capacitor before it like activates? I was like, I don't know. He's like, the number's not going to be correct. Like 5.5 gigawatts. And I'm like, wait, what? Gigawatts? Dude, okay. There's no way that the alternator on this turbine produces like a lightning bolt's worth of electricity to spare just for the flight capacitor. And the guy's like, dude, it's from Back to the Future. And I was like, oh my God. I mean, he let it go for like 10 minutes. Anyway, so you get an on-wing, you get these pre-flight things where they are harsh, man. You get in there and they start asking questions, and if you show a sign of weakness, they eat you up. And if they're pretty good about not being total jerks, meaning you get multiple chances at stuff. But if you show and it's like the most dishonorable thing in flight school is the ready room down. That's the worst thing you can do. I agreed with it then. I agree with it now. I'm lucky I'm smart because I didn't work hard enough. And that's the truth. I did not put in enough time. I put barely enough time to get to a level that I felt comfortable, which would be like I was getting A's on my to put it in terms we all understand, I had like a 3.8 GPA on my briefs. However, my rate of work for a normal person, I think the average flight student, even, which is smarter than the average bear, would have produced like a 2.7. I had one bad brief, one, and I picked the worst flight to do it on. It was my instrument check. I walked in and I was using something called the Gouge, which is like, there was this online repository of all of the briefs you have to do with all the answers to the questions. And the questions will be like engine system. Think of your history exams in college where you had that little blue book. And then I remember one where I had a question, and the question was Adolf Hitler. Go, right? Everything you know about Adolf Hitler. It was like, or no. It was pick Adolf Hitler or Joseph Stalin. I'm like, oh, I can do this I could have done that in high school. Anyway, so I remember filling out like two books on this crap. It's sort of stream of consciousness, you know, you come up with a thesis and then you just throw supporting crap after supporting crap. In the opening paragraph, you don't necessarily have all your supporting points. In there, it's just sort of like, Hitler was evil. You know, Exhibit A. Start of World War II. Exhibit B. Holocaust. Exhibit C. I don't know. There's other stuff, but whatever. So, anyway, that's the kind of questions they're asking. So, they're very open-ended. And you get in there, you never know what that guy's going to pick. You go in there and the guy's going to look at the list of stuff and go, okay, engine system, draw the engine system. And that might be all he does. He might look at it, go engine system, and go, okay, what's the RPM for, and this is helicopter talk, you know, like what RPM does the free gas turbine spin at? What RPM does the, I can't remember what it's called, but it's called NG in helicopter. It's called something else in a turboprop. What's that spin at? What's the maximum temperature at the inlet? What's the maximum temperature at the outlet? What's the maximum rotational speed of this? What is the torque allowance at this flight altitude? Whatever, blah, blah, blah. I'm making crap up. Or you could walk in and go, engine system. He'd be like, all right, tell me about the engine system. So you had to be ready with the on-wing, you knew when you got out of on-wing flights, then you sort of don't know. And you do a few on-wing flights. You do one or two with off. You go back to the on-wing. So you get feedback from someone else that also gives him feedback. You do a couple more flights, and then you do a solo. So that's what I was talking about before. And again, a lot of studying, a lot of work. I really should have been putting out 4.0 effort, because 4.0 effort would have been like another half an hour to an hour a night, on top of like maybe 2 or 3 or 4 hours. So, you know, there were a lot of nights where, because my roommate had 1,000 flight hours, he didn't care, he knew everything. He was like, it was cocktail time. I was like, cool, it's cocktail time. I really should have taken it a little bit more seriously. I wouldn't have done much better, because my issue was not academic. My issue was like monkey skills. Which, because of the amount of stress I was under, the fact that I wasn't hungover exactly, because I never broke the drinking rule, which at the time was bottle to brief. So if you are drinking, let's say it's a Sunday and you're watching NFL and you're drinking during the afternoon game. You have a flight the next day at 7 p.m. Your last drop of alcohol passes your lips at 6:59. Now, they changed those rules to make them more stringent, but at the time, that's what it was. And I followed those rules. So, and it was rare that I actually drank the day before a flight, even with that rule. But that being said, I think the idea of like the second day hangover effects were really hitting me, because we'll get to the social part right now. It was boom time. Every Friday night, I was booming. Almost every night, I was going out and just partying balls, especially with my buddy Pink Sheet. But, you know, he had a girlfriend almost the whole time, and so I was always looking for a party. And you find it a lot. There's always someone like looking to go to this bar or that bar. You cab it. It was it's in Pensacola, Florida, which has this whole like tourist area. So there's all that that you can get into. And I was just booming tough, booming hard. Then once you get, so we got, and that kind of hurt my. But anyway, so you go through this like whole process. You get to like the your solo. You do your check ride to make sure you're safe. All they're looking for is, do you know what the hell you're doing? Do you know what you're talking about? Can you talk on the radio? Are you going to get lost? Are you going to get hurt? Are you going to break something? The answer is no and yes to all the right questions. You get to go on your solo. I passed. I went out. I flew around for a while. I looked at my gas gauge and went, oh my God, I got 10 minutes of gas left. So I set maximum endurance. Remember, I'm at 10,000 feet, and this will save me again in my later on in my Marine Corps career. Listen up for when I talk about when I almost ran out of fuel in a helicopter the third time. So I'm at 10,000 feet, and you come in at 1,000, I think it was. So right there, I had 9,000 feet of I can kind of fly, what do you call it, get some free distance when you come down those 9,000 feet, and then set it to all the whole time I could. I set it to the maximum. It's called loiter speed, it's called bucket speed, so max distance. And then I had to, once you get into the airspace, you have to speed up to, I think it's like 150 knots. Flew back, no incident, came back like, hey, you've been flying too long. And then you get into specialized training. So you've done your FAM, you can fly a plane now. And in the middle of that, too, you do something called basic instrument flying, and it's just learning. Like, if you think about a plane, they fly at night. They don't have headlights or streetlights. They fly in inclement weather where you can't see out the window. How are they doing that? Well, they fly on the instruments. And there's a – so you do this basic instruments. You do form flying. And that was awesome. I did it with this guy I ended up being friends with my whole Marine Corps career, Danny. I won't give out his last name, but Pink Sheet, if you're listening, you know who that is. Oh, Pocket Pussy. So I think you got it at Danny, but whatever. I did it with him. I did, and you do it with the same guy. You do formation flying with the same guy. It's really funny because I think, so you do basic instruments. You know, you do your FAM and you do basic instruments in there. So you know how to fly instruments a little bit better than just looking outside all the time in case something kind of goes mildly wrong. There's aerobatics, form, and I think instruments, and then some navigation stuff. You do a bunch of sims, too. A lot of them. And what happens, they were really happy with my progress. I was a little bit slow in the FAM process because I needed a lot of extra flights to get the monkey skills right. But the reason I got those and I didn't get Pink Sheets was because I was very good academically. So this is like something to tell, you know, like one of those things, a takeaway. You know, if you're a younger reader, listener, make up for your weaknesses with your strengths. What I did, I didn't do it on purpose. It just sort of happened that way. But try to think of things like that. Like, oh man, I'm not that good at this flying thing, but I'm really good at the academic portion. Like, I really understand these engine systems, so I better, like, really be good at that, because it's going to get me out of trouble. And by the way, in the air, it'll get you out of trouble, because if you understand the systems and how they work and everything, if you have a problem, you'll more correctly and more quickly identify your issue, and increases your survivability. In any case, form flying is really cool. I mean, you get really close. You don't really do this in the fleet as often, especially in helicopters. It's not as fun. This is crazy, the stuff you do. You actually do, like, there's aerobatic form flying. You've seen it. It's like that. You do that in jet school, not in primary, but whatevs. And then you do instrument flying, and that's where you actually become a licensed pilot. At the end of primary, you take what's called the most important flight. It's called an instrument check ride. And that makes you can fly a plane now. In fact, you can get an FAA license at this point with your training. I have one. I have a pilot's license to fly a bunch of ratings on it. And that's essentially how primary goes. FAMS with some basic instruments, and then aerobatic flight. So remember, I was like super airsick. By the time I got to the acrobatic flight, I just didn't have any problems anymore. It just sort of went away for me personally. But it's like three of those, and then you get two solos. Meaning go out and do flips and, well, flips. Jesus, come on, man. Loop-de-loops. Emelmans. Although I don't think you could do that on your barrel rolls, aileron rolls. I mean, who's going to stop you? I remember one guy, he's like, look, you're safe to fly and you can do all these aerobatic maneuvers, but listen, dude, I can tell you're not into it. And you don't actually have, he's like, showed me on a piece of paper, like, this is what you have to accomplish on your solo. You have to take off and land, and then you got to go do five bounces. He's like, you don't have to, like, do these loops and freak yourself out, man, if you don't want to. You really don't. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm not saying to do it or not do it. But if this shit kind of freaks you out, bro, don't. There's no reason for it. It's like, look, there's a 60% chance you're going to be a helicopter pilot anyway. And then there's, like, another 10% of you guys. And the Marines, like, Coast Guard guys, like, you're gonna fly C-130. This isn't gonna matter. So, like, dude, he just saw I was uncomfortable with the maneuvers. The only aerobatic maneuvers I did were very high angle of bank turns, and I think, yeah, that was it. It's considered aerobatic flight over 30 degrees angle of bank. But in this plane, you could turn it, like, I think it was like 75, close to 90. So I was taking these super hard, like, super, like, three. The plane could go up to 4.5 Gs, and I think I got it up to like 3.5. And that's what was cool to me. I was doing these, like, very high, like, I would just make the plane go straight up in the air, let it depart, and, like, recover from a spin. It was a really easy thing to do. That sort of thing. It wasn't like I wasn't doing the loops or loops, aileron roll, barrel roll were allowed, and high aileron turns, high dives, high, like steep dives, steep climbs. I just sort of like flew it kind of like you would an X-wing, basically. And then, like I said, the instrument check ride is the most important piece of this, where. And that's the one time I screwed up a brief, and it was a bad weather day. We couldn't actually go fly. And the guy was like, well, it's your lucky day. The weather's too bad to actually take off. He's like, and he went and talked to somebody and came back. He's like, I looked at your record, man. He's like, you haven't screwed anything else up. We're just going to call this a weather delay, but, like, you really got to go back. You didn't know anything. He's like, you need to go back and, like, really study all of this stuff that's in the following books. And he opens up my bag where I had everything, and it's like, this book, pages 1 to 100 in this book, pages 20 to 25, 40 to 50 in this book. Okay, go. You know, again, it's like 20 years ago. Grain of salt. And then you're it. You're out of primary and you go into immediately intermediates and you get your assignment. I wanted to fly C-130s. Alas, I got helicopters, which I was happy about because it's the shortest time that you... It's the shortest contract. So it made me happy that I got it. And then now you're intermediates, and that's a story for another day. Thanks for listening. Love you. Bye.